I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Live. Can't Live. Talk
about books and stuff. Hello. Welcome to Can't Live. Remember us? Barely. I bet you barely do.
I barely remember myself.
Jen and I are here.
Hi.
We were chatting very animatedly before recording and then realized we should just start recording because that's what we're supposed to be doing.
It's a podcast revolution.
Yeah. We're really understanding what podcast means now. It's an audio medium. So that's where we have to begin. No, but Jen was talking about something that she brings up a lot, which is that she should have a single mom dating column.
Yeah.
Advice column, which I agree with.
Everyone should listen to me.
And I said, no one should listen to me. So just take that for what it is. That's the vibe of the podcast.
And also, I need to qualify the statement about a dating advice column. It's not because my dating life has been so perfect. It's precisely the opposite. So I feel qualified to tell you what to do to avoid disaster.
Yeah, you have wisdom to impart because of those things.
Exactly. You know, all those exes who never listened to this podcast.
All the shitty hardships that you had to put up with.
Yeah.
All the terrible nights. All the frantic text messages to friends about people being terrible.
Dina, did I have to send you a text that one date I had where I set my own hair on fire? Did I send you a text that night? Maybe I did.
Yeah, I think you did. That was honestly, I think, one of your highlights just as a human being.
I set my own hair on fire, yeah. You know, like in a bar, those little like candles, tea lights. Yeah, yeah. I leaned over to hear what he was saying and I set my hair on fire.
I mean, it's pretty incredible.
I mean, don't set your hair on fire, ladies.
Yeah.
Or, you know, gents or people who don't identify as either, don't set your hair on fire.
Just nobody set your hair on fire unless, I mean, if that's your intention, fine.
I feel like it's dangerous and I fear for your safety.
I mean, I agree.
Yeah.
Jen, a lot of time has passed. What's going on? What have you been up to?
Well, other than like experimenting via frying donuts, which is one of my...
Yeah, you really have been doing a lot of donut making.
This is my COVID pastime, is frying donuts.
It's really good.
I mean, Oscar likes it. One day I said to him, oh, I should bake something, you know, for the week for his snacks. And he said, donuts! And I was like, yes, we're going to fry donuts. Baking be damned. I've been writing a lot, but I don't think that's news. But that's like literally the only thing that's been happening is that I've been writing a lot. And I know Dina's also been writing a lot.
I have not. No, that ended. No? Summer. No, September. Once September hits, that's the end for me.
It's just done.
I just have no free time now.
No. You're working.
I work a full-time job and then I teach and then I have to like pretend to feed myself. And like, that's the extent of what I can manage as a person. I have no free time.
Yeah. I should qualify that. I feel like I'm keep qualifying things, but I have not written much since September either. Cause I teach.
Yeah. Like September is a bit of a, you know, new things, different things are happening, but certainly not those things.
No, but I like trying to edit and stuff, but like, it's like my own work. But like, I've been writing a new novel, which is like very scary. We're at like something like 70 pages now, Dina. I'm past the point of no return.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's where you got to be.
Yeah. But then if I don't go back to it very soon, I'll feel really guilty. Maybe that's what it is. That's how you finish a novel. just self-imposed guilt.
I mean, that's honestly, yeah. I mean, I have guilt, but no, I'm missing a couple of things. Energy, none left. Motivation, low. Serotonin, 0%.
Oh, what is serotonin? So like,
it's the thing that makes your chemicals in your body that make you feel happy or so like you can go on.
Oh boy. I don't know what that
so
is.
So I don't have any of that. And so like, I just got to do the basics. Like my apartment is filth. I come home from work. Yeah. And then I just like drop stuff on the floor or wherever it ends up. And then maybe several days, a week, who knows, later, I might pick it up. But because I'm not home all day, I'm not looking at it. It doesn't bother me. And then I come home and I mostly just go straight to bed. So yeah, I am fun. It's weird because on a normal September, I probably would have been going to a lot more events. I haven't been going to any events, really. Oh, I did go to the BC and Yukon book prizes last weekend. They made a fun, I didn't host the event, but I hosted the watch party via Zoom. Sheila Rogers, queen of the airwaves, hosted the event.
Friend of the podcast.
And that was all pre-recorded. And so then we had a watch party, kind of like if you were watching any other awards show, the Oscars per se. And so that was fun. I did like that. And it was on Zoom. And I kept joking that my plus one was a huge zucchini that I grew. And I kept like flashing it on the screen.
I mean, it's better than being digmatized because then you're zucchini-tized.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like people seemed impressed with the size of my zook. My big zook.
You were wearing a tiara, right?
And I was wearing a tiara, yeah. Yeah. And then Sheila Rogers saw that I was wearing one. And then Sheila went and got a tiara and also wore one.
Oh, I don't even own one.
It was pretty cute. Yeah. I'm going to get one for you now.
Oh, I would love one.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get one for you. Do you think Oscar needs one?
He might like it.
Okay.
We'll see. Yeah.
I'll get one for Rosie too. I'll get a family set.
Oh, you have to get one for Rosie. She just fucking hates stuff on her head and I love to torture her.
Yeah, it is really funny. She gets really mad.
She's always mad. She's been mad for like a few days. She had a friend over, her buddy Maggie, the golden retriever.
I feel like friend is a loose term.
No, they are friends. Like when they're in the park together, they have a lot of fun. But then Rosie got fed up with Maggie being here and took dropped a tiny little turd on Maggie's bed. Tiny little
she
turd.
She dropped a deuce in Maggie's sheets.
Yeah, but it was like one little turd. Like it wasn't a full poop. So you know she did it on purpose.
It's so funny. It's so funny.
She had to control it. Like I was like.
And oh my God.
She's such a dick. Like I don't know what I did. Actually. Do I know what I did to make her that way? Or was she just always like, am I nicer than that? Like, I don't drop deuces on people's beds.
You've never taken a shit in any of my private areas of my home.
Or on anything you own. None of your
property. You've never taken a shit on anything. And I've been to your home many times and not once.
Not once. So, I mean, I don't know what she thinks she's doing. Actually, I do know what she thinks she's doing.
So today's episode, it's just going to be me and Jen, because you know what? Another thing I can't manage to do, book a guest. So listen, clearly my mental health is fine and I'm doing great and everything is perfect and wonderful. So don't worry about me, kids.
I might be a little worried, but you, friends of the podcast, do not have to be.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. I started a new puzzle. This one has donuts on it.
Ooh,
it's really, yeah, it's in line with Jen's COVID activities. Mm. So today we're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, or the ugly, the bad, and the good. So we're going to start with the ugly.
Ugly.
Jen.
Yeah.
What do you have on the ugly front?
Here's the thing. I have to explain it because like the one thing that really scares me is like identifying things as ugly, because I should say that I've been thinking a lot about respectability politics and particularly as it pertains to Asian women, because in the time of COVID being an Asian woman is a scary thing. So I'm always really scared to point out things that are really ugly, and it's taken me many years. I'm 44 now and I'm still scared of things and, you know, being angry or showing, rage. So it's taken me a long time to try to unlearn it, but I'm still trying to unlearn the respectability stuff that is so deeply ingrained. But you know, what I really think is ugly is, when you have the moist towelette, as I call it,
I always forget that you call it that. I always call it the queefette, but I prefer yours.
The moist towelette, it's just the constant beaking at everybody else. And it creates this kind of like us and them. And it's so counterproductive to everything under the sun, particularly in our industry where you have a portion of people who seem to be dying on this hill that it's okay for predatory men to prey on others. And then there's everybody else. And I just don't understand. It's so ugly to me because it doesn't make any fucking sense. Like what the fuck, man? Like, all of this has only been helpful for like a portion of people, and all of those people apparently write for the moist towelette now. But it's like, anyway, to me, that's just like so shitty and ugly, and they're minions of like, I don't know, Proud Boys who I guess fund them. I don't even really know where the rivers of money come from. Not that I think the moist towelette makes rivers of money, but it's just, anyway. And then what the ugly thing for me is, any man who gets disgraced in Canlit, even just a little bit, immediately writes a justification for his actions in the moist towelette. And I'm like, yo, if you're looking to be, to gain your respect back or your reputation, that is not going to help you.
This is not the path.
No, like, really?
It's straight up the path of least resistance to gathering like an alt-right incel, just like misogynistic club.
Well, I just think, does anybody sit around to say they're organizing a literary festival and thinking about which authors to invite? They'll be like, oh, well, he wrote his justification piece of the moist towelette, therefore we should invite him to sit on a panel with Margaret Atwood. Does anyone ever fucking think that? No. And this is like directed at all the festival organizers across the country. I know some of you are friends of the podcast. You know what I'm saying, and I hope you're laughing.
Yeah, no one is doing that. No one is like, boy, that person really justified their terrible behavior. I think that's interesting that was your ugly, because mine is very similar.
Okay.
But obviously there's so much that we can't say because there are lawsuits that are going on, and it's really hard to be able to talk about this when the legal system in this country does not favor the stories of survivors. But so it's hard to say too much, but I think, you know, abusive people rarely have consequences, and they're so often platformed and continue to be published. So not just in something like the moist towelette, but, you know, they get books published. They do, you know, get to speak at events. It might not be at a literary festival, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there are still so many. I like that we have the exact same thing. But yeah, like, cancel culture is a lie. It makes me super angry. And it really helps them band together. And because there are rewards like publication, nothing is taken away. There's no lessons learned. There's no accountability. Like, even these pieces that you talk about being written, they're so devoid of any actual learning or care or outreach or just anything of value.
There's no, when people rail against cancel culture, which they always do, I always think cancel culture only exists because our system is not set up to actually provide real accountability for people who are predatory or abusers, right? Like, there's very little justice in general. So cancel culture is the way that people take that kind of accountability, or they try to keep these people accountable with quote unquote cancel culture. But it's only there because there are a lack of options for real reflection, self-actualization, even just apology. There's a lack of all of those things. There would be no cancel culture if somebody actually reflected, made a change in their behavior and genuinely apologize.
Also, we can see in on a smaller scale, you know, if somebody is called in online or called out or whatever, you could make a choice to apologize, to take on some action. And there have been instances where I think we have seen that happen. And even if it's a small thing, like certainly things have been brought to my attention where people are like, no, what you're saying is wrong or inappropriate or racist or whatever it is. And that's up to me to be accountable in that moment. And I might fail, but it doesn't mean that I should immediately go running to the moist towelette.
They wouldn't have us now, honestly.
Well, there's no way. A Canadian poet Dina Delbino is never going to be published by the moist towelette.
Underemployed malcontent Jen Suk Fong Lee is also not going to be accepted into the moist towelette.
I love it.
I'm like the most overemployed person. Like that is like the most ridiculous. I should say though, like, I mean, none of us are perfect. We all make mistakes. 100%. We all do that. And like, that's the
difference. I told you not to listen to me early in. So just keep that in mind.
Don't, you know, we all make mistakes and we all learn from them. We all think, okay, that is not something I will do again. And the reasons that I'm not going to do it again are X, Y, and Z. And then we incorporate that into our, you know, practice of ethics or whatever it is. But like when there's nothing, then sorry, I'm not going to read your stupid book or click on your stupid article or watch your stupid movie. Like I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not going in for any of that garbage. No. I've already got enough problematic garbage that I've enjoyed in my life. Okay. Come on. I like that you brought up being overemployed. I feel similar, but like I also think in the ugly side, on a personal note, the last month or so, my bitterness has been so high. And I, on some level, I do think I'm thinking about it somewhat more reasonably and just trying to reconcile like all the work I've done up to now and sort of looking at where I'm at, but it's just lately getting harder and harder to do that and feel okay with myself and with where I'm at and with just any of that stuff. Like, I don't even think I'm that great either.
Like
I know there are better writers writing better books and that have, and they deserve opportunities. I 100% know that, but I'm just feeling like I'm in a stagnant pool. And it's not even full of like alligators or anything. It's just like full of stagnant water and I'm trapped in the middle of it.
I think that bitterness is not uncommon. And I think a lot of like friends of the podcast will like understand that. And the reason I think that is I just did a recording for another podcast called The Question. And one of the questions they asked me was about the hashtag publishing paid me, when all of us who have not been paid $100,000 felt like hot garbage.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly voiced a few tweets in response to that. And because it really was only looking at one side of the issue. Honestly, I think we should do another episode just about that, like about being paid and money. And you've talked recently about how that's important. Yeah. I think that Jen and I are going to do another episode about that because I think it's something that we both have a lot to say about. And we have very different experiences of what we've been paid and what we've been paid to do. And I just think it would be interesting to explore that.
And I think it's something to look at that, you know, it's capitalism always, you know, ties our value to our, what we make or what we, you know, what our books, how our books sell or whatever. And you know, once we start down that rabbit hole there, the bitterness will just bury us alive.
Yeah. And some part of the bitterness for me too, is just, as I said earlier, like I'm so tired. Like I would love a little bit more, I don't know. I just, without the other things that give me serotonin, like socializing and all, like I've never been this entire time. I have not been into another person's home since February. Mm-hmm. I have not been to a restaurant or a bar since March. Like my life is such a 180 and I just, yeah, I don't know. Like if I had a little more financial freedom or the ability to take more time off, like it's what I know it's what I need, but it's just not possible at, right now.
Is this your discussion on what is the bad?
Yeah, this is kind of like diving into that because that actually is my first point in the bad. Like I wrote more I have a more wide reaching point, but then also again, on a personal level, the bad for me is that I really lacking writing time and I'm really lacking just like that creative energy. Like I don't have the energy to plow through like I would if there wasn't this particular global anxiety, I think. Like in a situation where I would be able to do things that I normally get to do that are like the thing that gives me the strength to do most other things, like that are hard work. And for whether that for me is like cleaning my bathtub or writing. Right now I am trying a new system where I literally just put a bunch of toilet cleaner in the tub because it is so disgusting that I'm like, this will eat it.
Does that work?
It kind of is working, and I will show you a photo later of a before and after, and you're going to be like, this is upsetting.
Okay.
I have an old tub that's been painted with that like over top porcelain paint. It used to be like a cool avocado green tub, and then they painted it. It's like very upsetting, but that paint and the layers of it are super hard to clean.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, even if you try and clean your walls and they've been painted over and over, like, so anyway, honestly, a regular tub that has not been painted is easier to clean than a tub that has been painted. The end. This is my, I've only ever lived in rental apartments, observation. But yeah, like I just, yeah, you know, again, I would have been to a lot of events at this point. I would have seen people, I would have hugged people, I would have socialized. And those are the things that kind of keep me fueled up. They're the renewable resources of my existence.
And now
it's not oil and gas. It's so, socializing is so my now, renewable resource. Yeah.
Now you're just burning fossil fuels and there's a limited.
I'm just amount. Exactly. I'm literally like, I'm shitting coal, I'm pissing petrol, I'm barfing up nuclear waste. I don't know. But the point is. Those don't all make sense together, but like, yeah, it's coming out of me, but nothing is going in.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm sure a lot of people are having this similar experience. But it really is like my level of extroversion is really bad.
It's not bad. You are who you are.
I know. But I know it's not a relatable position. So I always try and downplay it. Like I know where I sit on that spectrum is not super relatable.
I mean, I'm also about 60% extrovert. So it's like, I do get it. But like, I've been really leaning on the introvert, the 40% of me that's introvert. I did a personality test once that said it was 60-40. I don't know if it's true, but that's what I'm always leaning on.
I mean, we should always constantly be taking 3 to 4 personality tests a week.
I mean, the BuzzFeed ones where you get to pick what you would eat at a diner and then they tell you some stuff about yourself. That's cool.
Pick? Yeah. Tell us which of these bow ties you like. And then we'll tell you which Carly Rae Jepsen song you're most... like, and you're like, okay, how did any of these things come together? But also I'm going to do this. Thank you.
And I would love to write one of those. Just
me too.
Cause it'd be nonsense, but it would be so fun.
No, it's super fun. No, it's totally fun. This is the kind of stuff, the exercises I get my students to do in class.
Oh,
and this is why teaching a comedy class is fun.
Doing one of those BuzzFeed quizzes, you should is that going to be an exercise for your class? Cause you should do that.
They do have to make weird listicles though, which is fun.
Oh, listicles. Yeah. Listicles.
Yeah.
Well, you want to hear about my bad?
Yeah.
Okay. So recently somebody asked me, very innocently, actually, how many editors I have had who was a BIPOC editor. And I had to think really hard. And I've only had one. Guys, that's 10 books we're talking about here.
That's not enough.
No.
That's a very low percentage.
Yeah. And like literally we're talking 10 books. And I started thinking further into that. So in all of these, I did a count. So it's 10 books and 6 publishers.
I've had 2.
Yeah. 2?
Yeah.
Why did you get 2? Is it poetry? Is it because it's poetry?
I honestly think that is part of the reason, yes.
Okay. But over 10 books and 6 publishers, how many people who worked on my book, so including publicists.
And in one, I got to be honest, and like two of those instances, one was a solicitation and I had the same editor twice, two different publishers though. And one, I asked for that editor.
Okay. But you can, yes. Okay.
So like that's, there's other situations where, you know, I'm glad that I was able to have that opportunity to work with somebody that I really liked and respected, but I'm also, you know, I'm not Black, Indigenous. I'm not a person of color. Like it's, you know, I'm not saying it's not a priority to work with those people, but I'm saying that level of identification with an editor is going to be different than it obviously is for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's remarkable given that I am actually a person of color. That's really strange. And then
who is an editor.
Yes. And I'm also an editor, but then I was also thinking about other people who've worked on the book, like publicists and, you know, assistants and all that other stuff, all of those people. And I think over those 10 books, it's only been two. One was a publicist and one was an administrative person. And I'm thinking out of what could potentially be about 24 people, like two dozen people, that's it. Three of them were people of color. Yeah. So I started thinking about, because I've been thinking about sort of inclusion in publishing for a really long time, like longer than I've ever wanted to. Listen, this is not something I want to think about, but I do. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, it's easy enough to see that the authors, the focus has been on getting authors who are diverse. And that has definitely been changing and it's visible. But the authors are just like the public face of what, our industry is. And there's a lot of people who work to getting those books to market. And a lot of times, and I know people, other people who are smarter than me have said this, that a lot of like sort of BIPOC hiring is happening at the entry level position. So sort of my sort of take on that is that I have definitely applied for jobs at the executive level now for a few years. And what usually happens is I usually get to the final round of candidates and then I don't get hired. And I went and looked to see who got the jobs in all of those situations and they were all white. And I couldn't tell you exactly why I didn't get hired, but I will say that there was definitely a feeling that I was the riskier candidate. And my question is, and I should say that the people who got those jobs are mostly people I really like and respect. mostly. Only one do I not like and respect. It doesn't matter. That person doesn't know me from a hole in the wall, has never laid eyes on me or talked to me, so it doesn't really matter. But the if I'm the candidate who appears to human resources like I carry more risk, my question is then, how are you measuring risk, right? Like, are you measuring risk in terms of who can relate most closely to donors or stakeholders or board members? And if that's, if you think whiteness helps people with that, then what is that saying about what you think and how you're underestimating the stakeholders and what they can, they
and what is that saying about how your organization functions?
Yes. How is it built then? What is the foundation of your organization? And there are things, definitely things about me that I, like, I wouldn't hire either. In fairness.
I mean, I'm sure we could all point out things about ourselves that are like reasons we shouldn't be hired, but. Like,
let's be honest, Jen.
That's not the point.
Jen cannot read a spreadsheet. It's not happening. Somebody has to write it out in narrative for me to understand. But like, you know, I do think, you know, on the face of it, that was always the feeling that I got. It may not be true. So for me, that's just bad. Like, I mean, there, like I said, I think there's been a lot of discussion about what's happening at the entry level. And then people are saying that we have to have, you know, BIPOC representation throughout the hierarchy of an organization. And I'm just here to tell you at that executive level how difficult it is to be a person of color applying for those jobs. It's not easy. And I always, even to just to get that far, I felt like I had to dress better, have a better PowerPoint. My CV had to be the most beautiful one you've ever seen just to get that far. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's my bad.
No, that's it. It is bad. Mm-hmm. It's not good.
Nope.
And you're totally correct. And I think, ugh.
And I do think there's a perception that at the management or executive level, there are not as many people of color who would be candidates, appropriate candidates for those jobs. That is simply not true because I am
one of them. No, it's not true at all.
No, I'm right here, guys.
It's definitely not true.
No, it's not true.
Ugh, yeah. No, that's really brutal.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I'm happier without having those jobs now. And I should also say that because I'd have to look at spreadsheets. God.
Well, and I think that's something else too, though. Like when we actually think about what people want, having those jobs, and it's also potentially going to be more difficult because of dealing with, you know, a bunch of older, wealthy, white donors.
You know, that's not a task I would have liked to have taken on anyway.
It's not going to be, I mean, it's not that you couldn't do it. You could, you're incredible. Thank you. Yeah, like the path that has been laid out by other people is not something necessarily you can mimic directly, you know?
Nope.
There's no, and you don't have that shorthand that somebody who, again, was, you know, raised in a completely different racial socioeconomic background is going to have with those people.
No. And I think that, like, you know, I was discussing this with a friend, is that my mom was a bit of a debutante in Hong Kong when she was young. And she had like, she did like, they did.
Honestly,
like,
you don't talk about this enough, but continue.
She had like deb photos. She had like a debutante photo shoot. And I think there was like a coming out cotillion or something. Do they call them cotillions?
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, that's that particular side of my family is fancy. But and then she came to Canada and married a poor Canadian man. And then there you go. The rest is history. But we had always been brought up to have manners and to be polite and to know which fork to use. And to know how to set a table properly, and, you know, which is a drinking glass, which is a wine glass, blah, blah, blah. Like my sisters and I are very, like, you know, polite, mannered people, generally, not always. But, you know, it's funny to me, but even in those, like, I was raised to be able to navigate those situations, and I can, but only to a certain point. After about like an hour and a half, I just want to stick those like dessert forks into my eyeballs.
You also are, you know, you're not necessarily, yes, you're polite, you're kind, you're lovely. Obviously, I love you. You're wonderful. But you're also not someone that puts up with shit. So like the longer you have to, the more that's going to build.
Yeah. Eventually I'll just start screaming and tearing off like, my bra.
You're like, who wants to shotgun this beer? And then everyone's like, we got to get out of here.
I got to try spitting on my head now. Woo.
That's how you clear the room.
Let's talk about farts. And then everybody leaves.
Honestly, it's perfect and great. And I love it. But yeah, no, I'm totally with you. And again, like, I think when I talk about my bad, like, I feel like I'm glad that people are still able to have events, that we are still able to see each other, that there are some accessibility issues that are being dealt with in the virtual realm that we can't otherwise. But yeah, like I do, I really miss book launches. I really miss gatherings. And it's just so weird. And for me too, that was a lifeline to my career. Like for me, my career was not built on getting published in literary magazines and being shortlisted or winning awards. Like I'm not that kind of writer. I never have been. And I'm risky in a different way than you are, aka unpublishable in some respects. So,
you are not unpublishable, Dina.
I know. But I'm not like that classic writer that I remember in, you know, undergrad or grad school being taught, like, this is the way to get published. And like, I didn't do any of those things and I got published. So events were more stepping stone, not this other stuff. Yeah, it's just weird. I feel very detached too because a lot of events are happening when I'm at work or when I'm like on public transportation to get home from work. And so if things are happening to accommodate other time zones, because we're on the West Coast, like by the time I get home, events are over.
I mean,
like they're done.
They're always on a day or time that is like very busy time for me as a parent. Like
they're I'm always- sure anyone who has like a schedule type situation like that. Yeah. Or like a kid that has to be fed or.
Oh yeah. Like they're always school. Between the times of like 4 and 7. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have time between 4 and 7.
I know. Well, and it's tough too, because I'm trying to plan some events for the fall. And, you know, if I do want people who otherwise we could have flown out here for an event to appear and they're 3 hours ahead. So we have to consider, okay, like what is appropriate for them, even though this is quote unquote our time zone, but like, I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah.
And I think the other bad too for me is just, I can see how hard everyone is working for even less of a reward. Like book sales are fine, but they're not great. And like books that came out this year are obviously getting less attention and lower sales than they would in another year. And that really bums me out to see that. And I want to be hopeful that the industry can continue and improve, hopefully in ways that, you know, you have outlined today. And but yeah, it bums me out to know that how much sales are obviously bigger if people are at a in-person book launch with a bookseller, you know, than if you're trying to get people to do pre-sales and all these other things that are already difficult.
Oh yeah.
Outside of the pandemic. Like that stuff is always tough. And reviews, there's way less money for people to be paid to review books in, whether it's, you know, lit magazines or newspapers who have, I mean, when I think about the Georgia Strait and how they basically culled what used to be an arts and culture weekly into whatever it is now, like
it's basically luxury
gaming and gaming and condos. Yeah.
It's luxury condo
sports.
Yeah.
Video games, tech stuff, condos.
All the things I don't care about.
Me neither. All the things that, except for video games, I am critiquing in my new book. So stay tuned.
All right.
Yeah, like
I will allow video games.
I just don't have enough, you know, I don't have enough anger around it. Also, I literally play games on my phone all day, so I can't complain. You think I don't want to tap tiny things on my phone to take my mind off? No, I do. I want to tap a little thing and feel fine for 10 minutes. It feels great. but yeah, that's definitely another bad, you know. Yes, we're still able to see each other online, but I do worry about the industry overall because of what's happening.
Yeah,
and like, I don't want small presses to be even further pushed to the margin because of what's going on.
Yes, we don't want
that. And yeah, I mean, I know how hard people are working, like publicists trying to get people to go to virtual events and coordinate all of the things necessary and to potentially also teach writers who are not as comfortable with technology or social media how to do those things if they're, you know, if that's not something they're used to. I just think there's a huge learning curve right now for what we're doing. And yeah, we're in a creative field and people do want to read, which seems great, and buy books, and we're home. So it should be positive, but it's a little dicey. It's a little dicey. And yeah, and I think as a result of that, just I personally feel pretty detached from the industry and from the literary community in a way that I normally don't. But maybe other people feel more connected.
I don't feel disconnected yet, but like it could happen.
Yeah, like I definitely do.
Yeah, I think it's the lack of going to events, if that's your...
It's for sure for me, that is a huge part of it. And part of that is just too, like, you know, you have like a very rich home life. Mine is less rich.
Yeah, full of dog turds.
Dog
turds.
You're on that dog turd market, making all that dog turd money. Well, Jen, let's flip it around. What's the good?
The good, you know what? So many great books have come out recently or are
That's also what
out.
I have. I have a huge fun list.
I
have a list too.
Okay. So many good books. I can't keep up. We love you all.
Yeah.
And
we're all friends of the podcast.
Let's take turns. We'll do titles. One title.
Okay, you go first.
A History of My Brief Body by Billy Ray Belcourt.
Read it, loved it. Big.
Yeah.
Big hard eyes.
Yes. Your turn.
Okay. Burning Sugar by Cecily Bell Blaine.
Yes.
From Arsenal 12 Press. What an incredible debut collection. They just wrote a brilliant book, edited by Vivek Shreya, former guest friend of the podcast, and VS Books imprint. Wonderful.
Oh, we love it. We love it. Like a Boy. Love but,
to, you love to see it.
Like a Boy, but Not a Boy by former guest friend of the podcast, Andrea Bennett.
And designer of It's a Big Deal.
Yeah.
With True Friend. Yeah. Also incredible. I was supposed to get my copy yesterday, but because my mailbox is too tiny, I now have to go to the post office and pick it up because unlike you people working from home, I never get my packages. And I always have to go to the post office, like literally constantly. But yeah, very excited about that.
Yep.
Very excited about that.
Yep.
So far we're like a lot of Arsenal titles being brought up. Mm-hmm. Billy Ray Belcourt says not, but I just got Love After the End, an anthology of two-spirited indigiqueer speculative fiction,
yes,
edited by Joshua Whitehead. I literally just got it yesterday, bought it at work. So many great writers in there. Super excited. Again, also Arsenal Pulp Press.
Yes.
Really cleaning up. Yeah.
Domino's at the Crossroads by.
Oh.
I don't know how to pronounce this name.
Kai. Yeah.
Kellogg?
Kai. I think it's Kai Kellogg.
Yeah. Kai.
I did an event with Kai last year at the Writers Festival, a poetry event.
It's a real dream. A real dreamboat. I am dying to read this book, which I will as soon as I get through all my marking of assignments.
I know. No, that book seems great. Super excited about it.
Yeah.
Another former guest and friend of the podcast and one of the two editors mentioned earlier who edited two of my poetry books, Render by Sachiko Murakami.
Oh, what a beautiful cover of that book.
Inside is so beautiful. It is just, it's heartbreaking. It's intense. There's some funny moments. It's just really, it's a really beautiful book.
Yeah. I'm going to say Happy Hour by Marlo Granados.
Oh, yeah. I got to get a copy of that.
I got an advanced reading copy.
I love that for you.
Yeah, published by the newish Flying Books.
Isn't this the debut?
Yeah.
From Flying Books.
Yeah. And okay. It is a great, great coming of age, young woman on the verge of things novel. So hilarious. Also, every dude in it is a bro. and Marlo Granados cannot help herself from making fun of them. And I co-sign all of it.
I love it. Okay. I have a couple more poetry.
Yeah.
Books.
Yeah. Yeah.
It Was Never Going to Be Okay by Jay Simpson, former guest, friend of the podcast. Just incredible.
Are we both just in the acknowledgments? I think we might be.
I love it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We love you, Jay Simpson.
We love Jay so much. And yeah, what a great fucking book. I also have a copy that I'm going to mail to Daniel when I go to the post office to pick up Andrea's book.
It's just a circle of books.
Daniel, get ready for this book to appear one day if the U.S. Postal Service works.
I mean, okay, I have one. Okay. How to Lose Everything by Krista Couture, which I have not read yet, but I'm dying to read.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Friends of the podcast.
Friends.
We need to read. We all need to read this book together.
Yes. Also, Catherine Hernandez, Crosshairs.
Yes!
Just came out. Don't have it yet. Or if it's not out yet, it's around the corner.
I mean, who doesn't want to read a book by that glamorous dreamboat?
I know. Just what an inspo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have one that's not Canadian, but
that's fine.
It's Interior Chinatown by Charles Yu.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Holy moly. So Charles Yu is a writer on Westworld, for example. And this book is like, it's written as a screenplay. It's a novel. So good. Blow your mind. Everything I've ever thought about being a Chinese person in North America is in this novel.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love this. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, that's great. Okay. I have one more poetry book. Junie Dessel's Eat, Salt, Gaze at the Ocean from Talon Books.
What a
brand new
great
debut
title.
Collection. Great title. Cover looks beautiful. I'm still waiting for my copy, but it better show up real soon.
Real soon. That was the end of my was the end of my list.
Okay. And the only other thing is I just picked up, again, not Canadian, but Ali Brosh, writer of Hyperbole and a Half. I just got Solutions and Other Problems because I know that this is going to be like a treat for me to enjoy her super weird sensibility. I love comics in that form. Like I mean, I like graphic novels, I guess. I'm not, except I did read some Archie comics this summer and they were great.
Who doesn't love an Archie comic?
Yeah, so good.
There was one more and also not Canadian that I just wanted to point out, which is How Much of These Hills is Gold by C. Pam Zhang, which was long listed for the Booker. And it is, again, one of those books, everything I ever thought about being Chinese in North America, but like in a historical spec fiction setting. And I cried the entire time. Aww. No, because everything, there's this very deep connection. I find if you're like Chinese Canadian or Chinese American, probably Chinese Australian too, to the myth of like the gold rush and our presence in those spaces during that time. And like, the narrative is always the same, and she really pushes it. And it's almost, I have a connection to that sort of gold rush, early Chinese diaspora myth in the same way that some people have really close associations with like the Kung Fu stuff or whatever. And for me, that's my sort of alpha story. And I cried reading that whole book because it felt so deeply emotionally part of my past, even though it may not be, but there you
right.
go. Yeah.
Incredible. So yes, the good is so many good books. I'm really happy books are still being published and that we're able to get them. I'm really grateful to all the local independent bookstores here in Vancouver, but I'm sure wherever you are, there's great local indies. And the other thing is a lot of these indies will ship to you wherever you are.
Yeah. If you order
so
from Massey,
don't think
books,
you have to only get books from Amazon. You can order from Massey. You can order from Glass Bookshop in Edmonton. You can order from, like across the country, there's bookstores that are going to ship to you. McNally Robinson in Winnipeg. Like there's places that are going to send you these books. So
I have to also just say a shout out to all the book designers of these books we're mentioning because the covers of these books are out of sight. Like they are, I have not recalled another publishing season with such beautiful books. Really.
I think we're honestly the last few years, people have really stepped up their game in terms of book design. And we're really seeing that come through in beautiful, beautiful ways.
Mm-hmm. Love the covers.
That's great.
Those, the designers don't get enough love. So we love you.
Yeah. Big love to designers, big love to booksellers all over, big love to designers. As we already mentioned, publicists working so hard. We love you. I know you probably like get shit on a lot. So just know that we do love and care about you. Event organizers of all kinds.
Yeah.
Big love to you. Publishers, everyone putting in their hard work. People working at the printers, like what a time. So stressful.
I
can't even imagine.
No, I want to especially give credit to, like Dean and I have both done like online Zoom, sort of YouTube Live, whatever events now. Special credit goes to all the tech people who are there for the events and facelessly do all the details for us and monitor the chat and make sure everything's working and make sure that everything looks good, sounds good. Bless their hearts because that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Everyone is doing like, we're acting like it's everyone's home doing nothing, but literally everyone, whether they're home or not home, is doing so much work and I love it. And again, you know, I know I complain about, I'm not complaining about online events. I'm complaining that I miss in-person events, but I am still really so thrilled to see people in a little box on my screen. And it's beautiful. So we're doing what we can. Is there any like on a personal level, do you have anything else besides donuts?
Oh, that's good in my life?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't had my hair cut this entire COVID situation, and it still looks pretty good, and I'm grateful for that.
That's dope. Yeah. Happy for you.
What about you?
I mean, I always have snacks, of course. Yeah, that's one thing. Like, I never let any of my vices deplete in my home in case I get trapped here. So, like, things are always more stocked than usual, which is positive for me. And then I just, like, can scream sing Silver Springs all the time and, like, think about Stevie Nicks and I like that. Yeah, I'm doing a lot of just, like, loud singing because I probably miss karaoke. Just loud singing in my apartment.
I think, you know, stockpiling your stuff is really mature, and I'm proud of that for you.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, if I did have more, like I'm working on 3 books right now, and I feel like if I had more time, I could write more than 3. I could write like at least 2 more.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got ideas. Just things are sitting on that little back burner. Staying slightly warm.
Just slightly.
Mm-hmm.
160 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, they're at a low temp. I do still miss lipstick. Like, I only wear it when I'm on a Zoom because at work I'm wearing a mask for like,
oh yeah,
all day.
Yeah.
So that's the honestly still so weird to me to like when I get ready in the morning that I'm not putting it on.
It's actually been one of the hardest things for me during the pandemic.
It's really it is really weird. I know it feels weird. Like, I feel like a weirdo but then I'm like, okay, well, whatever.
Literally I wear a mask when I take Oscar to school. One of the other moms at the school at drop off is like, you know, I was thinking about you and your lipstick. I feel so sorry for you.
Oh my God. You're like, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's so nice of you to think of me.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I'm just watching a ton of TV. Like I can't. That's why poetry books have been so great for me, because I sit down and I read one over a few hours and then I go back through poems. But I am having a harder time reading a longer narrative.
Yeah, it's hard. I've been watching
TV,
yeah, a lot of TV.
But I can't watch any reality TV or anything like that anymore. It has to be like an intense narrative that I pay attention to for like 10 hours.
Oh.
I have to care about it. I can't just absently watch a thing. I have to be like obsessively watching it.
I can only watch.
I can't do it anymore.
I can only watch cooking shows and true crime.
I can never watch a cooking show. It makes me so mad.
I love a cooking show.
Yeah. I feel like I am so. And I also love that I make people so angry with how much I hate Coffee Crisp. It's literally a chocolate bar that is made by Nestle, like a demon company. So everyone in your Coffee Crisp chat, just don't come for me anymore.
Stand down.
But if somebody does want to publish a hit piece that I will write about why Coffee Crisp is terrible and also why it is like a perfect example of Canadian mediocrity, I am ready. I have a whole thing ready to go.
Good, 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 good.
It is, come on. It is pure, like the most tepid nationalism. It's really funny to me.
You can't see me, but I just realized as sniffing myself that I didn't put on deodorant this morning.
No, that's fine.
That's where I'm at in the pandemic.
Ugh, I did have a shower. And in case we were going to be on Zoom, I put on a full face of makeup, which I don't normally do.
I am wearing a very full face of makeup currently.
Okay, well, let's each take a photo and send it to each other.
Okay.
And then I'm going to make a weird collage that I'm going to put to promote the episode.
Yay!
Maybe will I put a picture of today's big zucchini in it? You better tune in to find out to my Instagram. And yeah. Okay. Well, that was great. Yeah. So I hopefully next month we'll have a guest.
Yes.
And it will be great.
Yes.
And you know what? Free Britney. We're team Free Britney always.
We are always team Free Britney.
We're always team Free Britney. You know us. Mm-hmm. You know what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
Time cast a spell on you, but you won't forget me. Mm-mm-mm. Anyway, happy fall book season. It's very different than usual.
We love you.
And we love you. Okay. Goodbye.